You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome once again to South Africa on 99.94. I'm Neil Manthorpe, and as always, my co-host is Lungani Zama. Do please rate, review, and subscribe. And don't forget that you can download the 99.94 app and follow us at least several times a week. Now, we're going to start this episode with a topic that we just touched on at the end of the last episode. And that is, two actually, the T20 Women's World Cup, which South Africa started inauspiciously but bounced back very strongly. But also the first week of the tournament very much was distracted, I think is the right word, well, the players at least were distracted by the inaugural player auction in the Women's Premier League. And it threw up fascinating stories, a whole bunch of them. And you know, it's the first player auction. It's the first time that players in the women's game, certainly internationally, have had that feeling of either being extremely well valued or not valued at all. It's still something that is quite chilling, actually, if you're not used to it, to be honest. I mean, even after 15 years, you know, some of the best players in the men's game still end up feeling very small, insignificant, unloved, unappreciated. And now the women had to experience it. So your view, there were lots of storylines, and I shall dig them out of you, but give us your overall impression.
Yeah, it was fascinating, Neil. Firstly, you must tell us that you are halfway across the world in, is it Mount Maunganui or wherever you are?
Yeah, okay, yeah. There's a different background. I've opened the blinds behind me. I am in Mount Maunganui. It's been an interesting trip. Just under 3 days with overnight stops in Joburg and in Sydney, and then arrived in Auckland before getting the short flight to Mount Maunganui, or to Tauranga, actually, and then a drive to Mount Maunganui. And it was interesting because all the speculation was about the damage that could be inflicted on the region and, in fact, the whole of the North Island by Cyclone Gabrielle. And I'm here to commentate on the two test matches between England and New Zealand for Talk Sport. And my producer, the executive producer, John Norman, I'm sharing a small apartment with him. And he took the government advice very seriously to stock up on food and supplies for 3 days. It was reasonable advice. I mean, you can't ever be sure about how damaging a cyclone can be. But, you know, there was all sorts of talk about everything being shut, electricity supplies down. John very studiously stocked up on food for us for 3 days. Although, had the electricity gone down, it would have been very interesting to see what plan we would have come up with for all the frozen pizzas and raw pasta that he bought for us.
I've also seen some of the things that John stocked up on. I won't expose you because it's still 7:30 in South African time, but I'm sure a lot of it would have been consumed. But to move on urgently, I'm still in South Africa, just down the road from the Wanderers, by the way, so not nearly as glamorous or as adventurous as you have been. The auction, I think first and foremost, a fantastic moment, long overdue for women's cricket, to be part of, you know, what has already changed men's cricket landscape for the last 15, 16 years, certainly through the IPL. And I think regardless of how many were actually bought in the end, you could kind of sense, just how how exciting it was to be just in the race, just in the reckoning to get some life-changing sums. And I know only South Africa only had four players eventually bought in the auction. But, you know, these are baby steps. There's only five franchises at the moment, and only 30 of those slots are actually in reserve for foreign players. So it diminishes the availability dramatically. Obviously, from a South African context, very interesting that Dane van Niekerk wasn't picked for a country, but was one of the four that were picked based on her experience and her expertise in T20 leagues around the world and what she's done for South Africa. And then obviously her wife, Marizane Kopp, fetched the highest price from a South African. She is one of the leading all-rounders in world cricket, and you would have expected her to go for a high price. It's over 3 million rand, which is more than she's ever made ever. You know, I remember clearly...
In her career.
I remember very clearly when JP Duminy signed for $900,000 from Mumbai way back when in 2008 or 9, and everybody just couldn't believe the figures. That's a pretty normal paycheck now in the IPL for a seasoned international male cricketer. So for women to be getting onto that rung of the ladder, and I mean, it's $183,000 she went for, but no women's cricketer in South Africa has ever earned that in their career. So to suddenly gazump yourself into a world where you could buy a house with one season's earnings and do that for the next 5 years, you then start understanding the huge financial revolution that can happen in the women's game. There's an SA20 tournament that's going to start and going to change the rest of those players' lives, surely, in that South African team. So it's an exciting time. And obviously a lot of heartbreak, like you said, but not just from South Africa, around the world. There were players from New Zealand, England, who fancied their chances, and the brutal reality of public auctions, where I think it helps that they've got a World Cup to almost distract them and go back the next day and prepare for another game, as opposed to sitting, dwelling at home and wondering what could have been or should have been. But it's the beginning. The overwhelming reaction was that it's the beginning. And just like we've seen in the IPL, things change dramatically when you realize that the balance of your team is probably wrong in the first season. And you start shopping, and possibly there might be one or two other franchises next season anyway. So slots will open up, and I'm sure more lives will change through the Women's Premier League.
So just to recap, the four players who were sold. Oh, actually, no, just go back to another point you made there. So five franchises, six slots available for overseas players, a total of 30, of which almost half were taken by Australia. I mean, the thing is about Australia, they are so dominant in the women's game that if you are in that squad, or in fact anywhere near that squad, you are going to be sold in this auction. They are the most dynamic team. And again, remind me to... I was so fascinated by why Laura Wolfart went unsold that I spoke to one of the few women correspondents who's been covering the women's game for, you know, not quite a decade, but certainly the last 7 or 8 years. And she had a really interesting theory at one aspect of this auction. But Chloe Tryon, who's a fabulous all-rounder, and, you know, I'm delighted for her that that she did sell, because she just played one of her best games, actually, in the Women's T20 World Cup against New Zealand. So she went for 30 lakh, as well as Dane van Niekerk, which is just over 600,000 rand. Shabnam Ismail, 1 crore, just over 2 million rand. And Marizane Kopp, who, as you said, one of the best all-rounders in the world, 1.5 crores, roughly 3.15 million rand. Only the four of them sold. So 14 from Australia, 7 from England, and then South Africa in third place with 4. New Zealand also had, New Zealand 2, West Indies 2, and... This is one of the great things about the WPL and about the women's game and the expansion of it, because I saw that there was one player from the Associate Nations, and I never knew. I mean, I knew who Tara Norris was because she played in the Women's Big Bash and also in the 100. But I never knew that she was from the USA. Left arm seamer, all rounder, Tara Norris. So there you go. Player number 30 from the USA. That Australian team, I guess, do you remember when Shane Warne was captain and then coach and mentor of the Rajasthan Royals? He was getting all his mates in from Victoria. You know, if you were half decent from Australia, particularly from Victoria, you got an IPL gig. And the Australians absolutely dominated the IPL for a while. So it's understandable that Australia would be dominating the first WPL.
They've had that Indian tender for the last 15 years, and obviously it still continues into the women's game because they are irresistible. But like, you know, just like the men at the time that the IPL started, they'd won so many World Cups that it was impossible to look past them. And the same applies to the women's game. So, yeah, fascinating. And I think on the backdrop of the Women's Under 19 World Cup that's just been in South Africa, there's a lot of talent in nations that we might have previously overlooked. I mean, Bangladesh and UAE have some fantastic talents who in the next few years will compete heavily in women's senior cricket. And you'd expect to see some more exotic locations pop up in the auction, at least if not in the actual tournament when it gets to sort of grow even bigger. So it's a very interesting time. And like you say, America has interesting players. Thailand has, of all places, Thailand has fantastic bowling attack. Big induckers. So, I mean, we're going to see some interesting names and really see the game change, you know, the landscape of the game change. So that's very exciting. But yes, to your first point, Laura Wolfart not making it is very surprising. I mean, this is somebody who Virat Kohli said loved the way that she plays a cover drive just a few years ago. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll see the likes of Laura and Nadine de Klerk. And, you know, it's very hard for South Africans. There's a lot of spinners in that attack, but obviously Indians are bread and butter when it comes to spinners, so it's going to be very hard. You're going to have to be outstanding as a South African spinner to get any chance of getting into the IPL as a frontline spinner. But let's see what the future holds.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to explore that point a little bit more. Take a short break for the moment.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI, we've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
Just unpacking, certainly from a South African point of view, anyway, the inaugural player auction at the Women's Premier League. Some really outstanding South African cricketers who went unsold. Now, left-arm spinner Nonkululeko Mlaba was, I think she's just reached number 2 in the world. She's been in particularly good form, so she might feel a bit aggrieved. But as you just mentioned, you know, there are so many good Indian spinners, so that's the reason that she didn't make it. Nadine de Klerk, the fast bowling all rounders were sort of dominated the overseas slots. So I thought she would really be in with a shot. So I mentioned that I'd spoken to a long serving female women's cricket correspondent, and she said that Laura Wolfart was her style and her aesthetics didn't cut it. Her theory was that the franchises, for whatever reason, wanted the most dynamic players. They wanted dynamism. They wanted the most explosive players, and the, what was the word she used? The corporatization of the women's game meant that it still needed to be sold in order for those who bought franchises for, you know, millions and millions of dollars. They have this theory that they still have to sell the women's game before they think primarily about winning the tournament. Do you know what I mean? She's saying that there's still a lot of doubters, mostly men, I assume, who follow cricket,
oh, yeah, for
who
sure.
need to be sold the women's game.
No, I get completely where she's coming from, and I'm sure that is the case, not just in India, in a few parts of the world. But you know, we've been lucky. We've had not just the Under-19 World Cup here on these shores. We've also had the ongoing T20 World Cup going on. So we've had a very close look at the quality of women's cricket, and I'm pretty sure that in a couple of seasons, once those doubters have sort of had their fears quelled, we'll see a lot more cricketers of substance make their team on merit and not so much on aesthetics, as you say, because, you know, runs are still runs, and Laura Wolfhard on form will definitely put balls away and get teams off to good starts. We've seen that across the world. So, you know, there's a few in several nations who will be wondering when their turn is, and when it comes, I'm sure we'll see the league come to life.
Ayabonga Kaka, another one. Tasman Brits might have expected. You know, there's one contract that I desperately hope would materialise, and that was Masabata Klaas, who, you know, grew up in a tiny, dusty township, 60 k's outside of Bloemfontein, and she has made, it to the professional game on a route and on a journey too hard for me to even remotely comprehend. If she had just gone for the lowest base price, that would have transformed her life more than these enormous sums would have changed anybody else's life. But they have it to aspire to. I just hope all the women's players have it to aspire to, Zums, but I hope that it doesn't discourage them. Do you know what I mean? I am acutely aware, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, maybe in the next episode, of the number of South African male players who have felt slightly disenfranchised, unloved and ignored during the SA20. And it's fabulous for those who are included and those who get bought in the auction, but it can be pretty devastating for those who are left behind and ignored and feeling very unloved.
No, of course it does. It's human nature to look across at your neighbour who's thriving and you wonder, what about me? But the good thing about these leagues, certainly from an SA perspective, is that we know the SA20 is here for the next 9 years at the very least. And from next season, there will be a women's competition as well. So, you know, and it's at the start of the year and it's just before the IPL. So there's a window there where players can show owners who generally own franchises both here in South Africa and there that, you know, I can play. Maybe you overlooked. Maybe your scouts were wrong and they didn't do their due diligence because I can win matches. I mean, Rula van der Merwe, you'd think Hyderabad trying to find a way to get him into their IPL team, given what he's done for Sunrisers Eastern Cape. Yeah, so as hard as it is for a lot of players not to play in the first edition or not to be picked up in an auction, the great thing about the SA20 is that it has become almost an umbilical cord for South African players looking to ultimately end up in the IPL. So, you know, there are other seasons, there'll be other opportunities, and good luck to them.
I just want to confirm for those who aren't aware that Chloe Tryon has gone to the Mumbai Indians for 30 lakh. Marizan Kapp's gone to the Delhi Capitals. She was the subject of a vigorous bidding war between four of the five franchises. So she's gone to the Delhi Capitals. Shabnam Ismail has gone to the Uttar Pradesh Warriors, and Dane van Niekerk to the Royal Challengers Bangalore. On the subject of Dane van Niekerk, you just mentioned it. She's too slow, not fit enough, whatever you'd like to call it, to play for her country, to captain her country. But she's good enough for the Royal Challengers Bangalore. Is that subject closed now? Are we have Cricket South Africa just said we've made our fitness criteria, they are non-negotiable, and that's it. Move on. I wrote a column a couple of days ago in which I suggested that the South African fitness experts or the panel should have a clause in which they say that they need to be satisfied that a player, male or female, has made every possible effort to reach the fitness standards required by RSA, by Cricket South Africa, and that if they have done so and they have reached whatever wording they like to, and they have reached an acceptably close level to that minimum standard, then they should be available for selection. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what are they going to do if Dane Finike runs her next 2K time trial in 9:31 rather than 9:48? She misses it by 1 second. I mean, she's worked for 6 months to get herself back to fitness. She lost 10 kilos. That was a personal best.
Yeah. I hear your point. But, you know, the criteria was in place for even before she was injured. We asked Sasanda Magala, asked Graham Smith, who was part of the team that enforced it, for CSA at the time, he was director of cricket. And once you've cast them in stone, it's very difficult to start tweaking those rules and bending them, because if you suddenly turn the wording around and make it as eloquent as you've just said it, it then means players who have not had opportunities previously by being excluded on those grounds have reasons to question it. I mean, it's not as if the goalposts shifted 2 months before Dane was selected or not selected for the World Cup. She knew what she had to do.
Zams, I know, Zams. But the DRS is there, or was initiated, to eliminate the howler. These fitness standards should be there to eliminate the lazy and the arrogant, of which there have been a few in the men's game in recent years, okay? We know who they are. Those guys who believe that their place is untouchable, and they've been lazy and they haven't made the effort to get as fit as they possibly can. That's why I think these things have been introduced or should be introduced. You know, I mean, we're talking about a few seconds over 2Ks. Yeah, I mean, you know, and if you have a minimum skinfold test and you miss it by, you know, a few millimetres, so you've got 1% more body fat than the limit. I mean, does that mean that you shouldn't be included? Yes, those who make no effort, I still find it very frustrating. I've very, very hard to accept it. And remember that she's never run in her life, Dane Finike's never run 2Ks in 9.5 minutes. That was a personal best, 9:48.
I hear your point completely, and I do not sympathize. I mean, it's a World Cup on home soil, you're the captain, and you would have added significant value to that team and experience. And I mean, we'll get on to that opening game, but you probably would have, you know, got South Africa through those waters of that first game against Sri Lanka. But the reality is, Manners, there were rules set in place, and she knew that her race was against those rules, not against some other, you know, sentimental practicality. The rules were in place, and they've been pretty public. And she's lost a teammate who's retired early because of those rules. So, you know, how would Lizelle Lee feel if suddenly, on the eve of the World Cup, we've changed our rules because we realized that our captain, long-serving captain, was not going to qualify under the current system. So we've tweaked them, and we feel that it's now a subjective onus on our strength and conditioning coach to determine whether or not Dane's tried hard enough for the last 6 months. We know what we did to Lizelle Lee, but we've now changed the rules. We realize we're wrong. I mean, I'm sure there's even some sort of legal grounds for her to have gone back to CSA and said, well, if those rules were in place when I retired 6 months ago, I definitely would have treated it differently. What has changed in the 6 months since? You know, Sisanda Magala lost a year and a bit of international cricket just because of aesthetics. It's rules that have been there. And as brutal as it is, you can't have one rule for some and another for someone else. You know, it immediately creates a double standard, which has far bigger ramifications. So it's not an ideal stance, but they've taken it and they've got to kind of stand by it, unless they put a limit on it and say from the 31st of December 2024, we will change and relook and evaluate what our fitness criteria are. But you've got to give a period of time that allows everyone to understand that rule is changing. You can't just overnight go, oh, shucks, Donna is definitely not going to make it. We've got to change it for her. It's not right, you know. It's just not right, and it's unfortunate. And I'm just glad that whoever it was, her agent or ICC or whoever, has quickly said, okay, well, if you can't play, you can at least commentate on it and talk about the team that you could have played with. And she's been at every South African game. It is unfortunate, but it's life. And it teaches the generation that comes before that rules are rules. If you start bending them, you just create a very dangerous economy, because it, again, you know, gives you a sense of privilege for some players who rules don't apply. You know, you need to get a visa to get to New Zealand for a reason. If you miss that deadline, you miss that deadline. It doesn't matter how much TalkSport value your opinion and your multicolored glasses. It's just, oh, Manners didn't make it. There were rules in place. He's supposed to get a visa. He didn't get it. He comes from South Africa. They need a visa to get to New Zealand. It doesn't matter how many people in New Zealand know you. That's, you know, that's the takeaway from this. There were rules. No one planned her injury. She was injured, though. She knew she was in a race against time. And as much as she's done, she just didn't get there. It's unfortunate. It's terrible. But rules are rules.
You're a hard man. You're a hard man. And can I just tell you that if I hadn't got my visa to come to New Zealand in South Africa, I could have got it on arrival. Okay, we'll take a short break and come back for a very short final section.
Whether it's missing flights or retirements out of the blue, whether it's resignations or bans, as the old saying goes, there's never a quiet day in West Indies cricket. So make sure you listen to West Indies on 99.94 to stay up to date with all the latest fallout with the teams in maroon.
All right, just a couple of minutes in the final section, Sams. I get, yeah, and you're kind enough to say that you understand my position, which I feel very strongly about, and I understand yours as well. And I just don't think, I guess the point is, those rules should never have been so hard and fast. I always think that setting minimum standards for fitness was a good idea, and there should always have been a criteria, an escape clause, which, and it's not just about Daarné van Niekerk. It's not, you know, it's about lots and lots of cricketers who have different metabolisms and different body shapes and different strengths and weaknesses, and to have hard and fast rules applying to all cricketers, male and female, I just think was a gross error of judgment. You know, fine, 9:30 for a 2K time trial, and it can't be that hard for biokineticists and fitness and conditioning trainers to see whether a player is giving his or her 100%. You know, I'm definitely not going to name any names, but, you know, I have seen male cricketers take the piss during fitness tests and bleep tests, and you know, they've hated it and they've disrespected it and they haven't taken it seriously. And, you know, maybe they're the ones who need the bucket of ice water thrown in them at them. Anyway, I wanted to ask you about, you can come back on that if you like, but I wanted to ask you about the women's game and the way forward in South Africa in particular. Do they try and go it alone? Does it try and stand alone? When the women's SA20 is introduced, should it run concurrently alongside the men's tournament? Should there be double headers? And I'm not being condescending or patronizing and talking about piggybacking, because I think that the women's game around the world is strong enough to grow by itself. But does South Africa have the resources? Does it make sense to run the women's tournament concurrently?
I would have thought so. We had this conversation on Sunday night after the final that, you know, what does the future look like for this new tournament? Are the women, are there going to be as many teams? Are their fixtures going to be double headers that mirror the Paul Royals playing against Pretoria Capitals, and the women are going to be the curtain raiser? You've definitely got to think about that, because you want to build on the foundation that has been laid. I mean, to be frank, the SA20 has also kind of built on a foundation laid by IPL teams. So you kind of got to follow a similar recipe here, where you build your women's franchises in that same image. And if that means you sort of have to dovetail for the first season and see what the appetite is. I mean, there have been crowds at these Women's World Cup games, but not at every game. It's still a game in its infancy in terms of a commercial product in South Africa, and certainly in terms of something that people get up and go and watch specifically. So you have to be practical and allow them the opportunity to play in front of bigger crowds, which the SA20 has got. So to try and build a whole new identity separate and independent of a tournament that's already been a success, I think would be foolish, certainly from a South African perspective. We spoke about the value that fans have got coming to SA20 games. If you make it separate completely, you instantly double the cost for a fan who wants to watch both matches. You've kind of got to be practical. And I know that's not always feasible, because that means surfaces are being played on twice. But certainly in the first season, and I think the woman would agree that it's a better product for them if they're playing in the same venues and given access to the same media attention. Everyone's already there for the men's game. Why would you not just start the day 3 hours earlier and not have to lump around and move OB vans and move commentary teams? You just double their shifts and say, we're starting with the women's game as curtain raiser, and then an hour and a half later, we the men's game. Like, we'll clear the change rooms, we'll carry on. I think that's the sensible way to do it. Otherwise, you're starting to force a crowd to make decisions. Are you going to Paul to watch the women's game, or are you going to Cape Town to watch the men's game? It's an unfair competition. So why create competition when you can create a sense of camaraderie and really show fans, especially younger fans? Yeah, so to try and build an independent audience, you know, it's an unfair competition. And the men's game is established even before SA20. The men's audience is so much more established that they get so much more attention and exposure that you'd rather lean on that and build off that foundation. And you know, obviously Graham Smith and his team have a year to consider that, how they build the women's competition into what is already a great product. But yeah, the hope would be that they build it alongside and not independent of the men's competition.
You see, we've gone from one subject in which we vigorously disagree to one in which we are violently in agreement.
I will also go back and say that I cannot be a doctor without getting the necessary qualifications. However much I want to save lives and I have a gift that I've been told, I just have a sense of saving people's lives. Without getting the necessary medical qualifications, which meets a certain criteria, I cannot be trusted to perform open heart surgery. There are rules and regulations in place to make sure that there's a certain level of quality control. So if it applies in the medical field and the legal fraternity, and you can't be a chartered accountant based on your ability to calculate fours and sixes, it applies in cricket too. You know, these are life-changing sums that we're talking about and life-changing opportunities. It should apply. And I say that with the greatest respect, but, you know, the rules are there in place for a reason. And it's unfortunate sometimes that it leaves some people behind, but at least everybody knows that that is the barometer.
So you're comparing to saving a single short third to performing open heart surgery?
I'm not comparing a run to third man saved as to saving a life. Absolutely not. I'm just saying that everybody who goes into surgery knows that they are comfortably qualified to do this, and that there's a trust based on the fact that they've done the hard yards. And when you step out and represent your country, there are rules now in place to say you are deemed fit enough by medical or fitness experts, and is a blanket rule for any South African trying to play for South Africa. Not every team does it, but South Africa do. And now that they do, they've got to keep those rules the same for male and female. And that's what they've had to do. And from my understanding, they've tried to give Donna every single chance. She just didn't get there. So it's not as if they left her to her own devices and she came in cold and, oh, sorry, you failed. Bad luck. They've tried to help, tried to help. But the rules were in place. And it's unfortunate. But it's good to hear her give her expertise in every single match. And you can understand why she's been such a long-serving captain, because she reads the game well and she knows that team inside out. It is a pity for the team, but the team goes on.
It does indeed, and we shall go on as well in our next episode. But that's it for now. I've got spaghetti bolognese to cook here in New Zealand. So thank you for listening to South Africa on 99.94. Wherever you are in the world, please rate, review and subscribe, as I asked beforehand. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter at Neil Manthorpe and at WhamZam17. Been a particularly spicy one today. Thanks, Zams.
Thanks, Manus. You make your spaghetti bolognese. I will make breakfast and coffee, and you enjoy your IPA or whatever it is that you have in your hand. I'll start my day. You can end yours.
I will do. Chat soon.
Cheers, mate.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.